The weather has finally changed, Justin. It's like, I would say we are decidedly in fall now. As you literally take a fucking sip of, is that a pumpkin spice latte?
Hell no. Well, okay. So it's a pumpkin cream cold brew.
Oh, that's good. All of it's good. I'm a PSL fan.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a big fan of it.
It's a cold brew, but it's got the pumpkin.
The pumpkin foam.
Foam in it.
Yeah.
This is what I become. My wife just drank this and she's like, I just want a little bit. You want the rest? And I was like, sure. I become that person.
Oh, that's my role in the household.
Yeah.
Here,
you just finish it.
Finishing it.
Except
up, yeah.
I've made a stand. When someone says, this is gross, do you want to try it? I always say no.
You're not open to sort of new experiences?
No, I am. But if it's starting off with, this is gross, you should finish it. I think there's a better way to package that to me.
100%. Are you a, would you say you're an adventurous eater?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I will try almost anything. Like, but if it's like something that's like a homemade food or something like that, and it just didn't turn out right, I'm not going to like suffer through it. You know what I mean? I don't need it.
Totally know what you mean.
Yeah.
But dude, I had this week an apple cider donut, which I really like. Fall flavors, you know, I like it's they're my favorite flavors. I'm a big Christmas sort of flavor as well, but like the fall flavors are my favorites. So I've been sort of doing the fall tour of things. Elaine and I got we got pumpkin spice cheese.
Okay.
Now hold on. So basically we were at Mariano's, and if you go to Mariano's, you go to their cheese section. They always have like samples out. So this was last week, and we took a sample of it, and we were like, oh, that was actually pretty good. And we were like, should we buy some? We're like, it's a little expensive. If we're still thinking about it the next time we come to Mariano's, we will get it. So we go back, you know, a few days ago, and we're still thinking about it. They've got it discounted, so we get it. And it's amazing. It's one of those things where, like, I don't know if we need pumpkin spice everything. You know what I mean? Like, as much as I love pumpkin spice, I do also like, I can't accept that it is a little silly that as soon as, you know, October rolls around, like it's everywhere. But pumpkin spice cheese, check it out, man.
Did you ever question why it was discounted?
It's old.
All right, that's fair.
But, I mean, like it was in the discount, like old cheese bin. Which just means we have to eat it relatively soon.
You don't know what cheese, like, you get it some mold on it, then it's just natural. It's blue cheese.
Yeah, they do age well. I'm also, like, I am cautious about what I put into my body to an extent. But I'm also, and I'm sure I've said this even with you, is I'm like, my grandpa got prescribed cigarettes at the doctor when he was a young man. I think I'm going to be fine. You know what I mean? Like, if I eat the cheese that's like a little old. Oh. It's like, it doesn't smell bad. Like, it still smells good. You know what I mean?
It makes you stronger, you know? Like, if it doesn't kill you. You know that phrase?
Oh, I'm familiar with the song.
Yeah.
Miss Clarkson's song.
Kelly Clarkson?
Is that not Kelly Clarkson?
Well, I was thinking of Kanye West. I mean, she does sing it. What kills you makes you stronger.
Yeah. Is that not, that's her, right?
Yeah, that one's her. But I thought you were thinking of that don't kill me. It only gotcha. Make okay, me sure, stronger. Sure.
Is that in his Daft Punk? Is that the you know what I'm talking about?
Kanye?
Yeah.
He had a Daft Punk album?
Not that album, but he did harder, better, faster, stronger. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I think it was with Daft Punk.
What you're saying right now.
Yeah, he sampled Daft Punk. Or I don't know what happened first.
He sampled Daft Punk.
Yeah.
That was 100% how it worked. Anyway.
Whoa, Daft Punk is a French duo, I just found out.
They're French?
Yeah, and do you want to feel...
I thought they were robots.
Do you want to feel old, too? This was released on October 13th, 2001. So we have just passed the...
23
anniversary, the Michael Jordan anniversary of,
is that of the Kanye remix?
No,
or
this
is the,
just the original. Daft Punk one. Yeah.
Yeah. I like them a lot. I wish you know what I like about their music? It's all songs about like how hard it is to be a little robot. I get it. I get it, man.
I struggle with that every time I pop an Astrobot.
I read something that was like, David Cage, like it was like a tweet. It was like, David Cage, colon, can a robot really be a person? And then Yoko Taro, colon, can a person really be a person? That's the difference. That's the difference,
that's
right?
That's tough.
The difference.
I feel like that sums up our podcast pretty well.
100%.
Yeah.
And throw the medium in there, and then you've got the whole stew going. It's a box! What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to Hitbox episode number 215. For real this time. Last week I was mistaken. This time it's really 215. My name is Peter Hunspatek, and joining me as always is my wonderful friend and co-host Justin Makovich. Justin, how are you? You're off today?
Yeah, so I spent Sunday, I would say a pretty fall Sunday. So we have like one of those little Christmas villages at our house.
Oh, yeah.
So my mom gave us like, you know, a huge collection of them. So now my wife has started to add to that collection with the same like village pieces. So she's been on Facebook Marketplace a lot. So mm-hmm. Facebook Marketplace took us off out to Long Grove, Illinois. Have you ever heard of Long Grove, Illinois?
I can't say I'm familiar.
Well, Peter, you better fucking get in your car and go to Long Grove, Illinois. It's not that far away. It's actually probably quite close to you. Not quite close, but it's definitely closer than where we are. But it's basically this like perfect little fall town. They have a bunch of like shops everywhere. They have a, what do they call that with the water and a wheel, water wheel? Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Yeah, they have a water wheel. They have like a river or a lake. They had a scarecrow decorating contest that people from all over the town like gathered and made scarecrows. They had a professional pumpkin carver come in to carve pumpkins professionally. By the way, professionally carved pumpkins are creepy because it looks like there's a face stuck in a pumpkin. I don't think I'm for that.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Like, I want just the crude triangle eyes that are just cut in there.
Yeah, no, I get you. What you're
there was also like a guy who was at like the general store there who like knew everything about the town. They have this bridge that they're known for, and I was doing some research on it, and allegedly the bridge has been hit. This was an article in 2023. They have this bridge that's been hit 49 times by traffic.
Oh,
it's a nice little historic bridge. It like has a clearance of 8.6 feet, and apparently people can't read because they keep crashing their trucks through it. And
oh, I see what you're saying. Are you familiar with the YouTube channel for the? Keep talking.
Oh, so people keep crashing it into it, and the guy at the shop had a postcard of a truck that had hit the bridge, and that was a postcard like welcome to our town. And I made the mistake of asking him like why this picture was like this, and then he told me the whole history of the bridge and the town and everything like that. But definitely felt like this like perfect little small fall town. I did have a apple cider donut from their chocolate shop, and they also have a sock monkey museum if you've ever wanted to see a sock monkey or two.
So two questions. Question number one is, was there like events going on? That's why like this professional pumpkin carver and stuff was there. Like, was it like a fall festival that was happening, or was this just what's going on in the town at all times?
They had a fall fest the day before, and the pumpkin carving was like left over for it. This is one of the saddest stories. So the town is having a dog parade, and we were walking through this little like park area, and this old couple goes to us and they're like, hey, have you seen any of the dog parades? It was supposed to happen today. So my wife and I were like, oh no, we haven't seen any dogs. We didn't know there was a dog parade. And we walk away from the old couple. And then my wife goes, she's like, yeah, there's not going to be one because that's happening on the 20th. And I was like, wait, why did
fucking God?
Why don't you tell? Why don't you tell them? And she's like, I couldn't be the one to crush their dreams that they came a week early for the dog parade. Yeah. I mean, which I don't blame her for, but I thought that was pretty funny. This poor couple's waiting every time they saw a dog on a leash. They're like, is this the parade? No,
that's so funny.
No, next week is the parade. So if you want, hey, if you want to have a fun dog parade, the 20th of October, head to Long Grove.
I just might. I'll tell you this, though. If you're looking for a good time on YouTube.com, it's a website that hosts like videos. The 11'8" bridge. Are you familiar with this?
No.
So this is a bridge in North Carolina. And basically it is a. Like you have to drive underneath it, but it is like pretty small for like what is typical for like bridges and stuff like that. And so it's called the can opener bridge because basically pretty much any truck that drives underneath it is going to have the roof of the truck ripped off.
Oh,
and so there's all sorts of like warnings and stuff like that, like all over, so that like people do not crash into this. But every single day, these trucks just get just absolutely obliterated. And so for the longest time, this was a family pastime of in my family of just watching compilations of this.
Oh, I'm watching some of this now. 11'8".com. It's like at a certain point, don't they got to do a better job of letting people know?
So they can't. Well, I mean, like how many signs?
No, but it's
do
like
they need, right?
It's clearly the signs aren't working. Like, there's got to be something else happening there. Like, maybe there should be some sort of, this one's going slow as if the speed is what's the problem here.
Yes. There's all sorts of, like, different, like, people who are like, you know what? I'm going to try it. I'm going to give it a shot.
This will be
they
the
have
one.
Raised it, I believe, by, like, 6 inches or something like that.
Still not enough because you're just going to have 8-inch, like, taller trucks getting stuck now.
Yep. But if you're ever looking for a good time.
Have you ever been in a car that, like, is too big for an area?
I mean, like, I drove a minibus once and I didn't like doing that.
Okay, so this is like a minibus, but we were driving like one of those like big vans that hold like 12 people one time when I was on a school trip, and we go in a parking garage. And the parking garage was not made for this massive 12-passenger van. And we didn't know that except for whenever we passed one of the concrete, what do they call those, protectors,
pillars
on the roof. An indent. Boom. We saw the indent of it follow the car. So every time we knew it was there. Fortunately, it was very tall, so we couldn't see the top of the van. And I don't think the rental car place checked the top of the van. But let me tell you, it probably wasn't white anymore. It probably
didn't look great.
Yeah, it was probably a nice scraped color. By the way, this is a compilation from 2018, and it is going to go on for 11 minutes and 25 seconds.
It's incredibly entertaining, dude. You put that on, you and your wife, big bowl of popcorn, you're going to have a great time.
And some cereal. Pumpkin spice frosted mini wheats.
I'd fuck with that.
Can I tell you? They've been on clearance for the past month, and I think I'm the only one who's been purchasing them because I went to buy them again this week and they were all gone. Mm-hmm. So I had to buy regular mini wheats and I was a little upset.
I'm really sorry to hear that for you, Justin. To help, I would love to give you a preview of what's coming up in the news. The Pokemon company suffered a massive data breach, revealing some less than savory things about Pokemon lore. I went hands-on with Silent Hill 2 Remake, and Nintendo announces new hardware, but it's not the hardware that you would expect or that we've all been waiting for. We're going to talk about all those headlines and more, but before we do, I would like to tell our listeners that they can join our Discord server. The link to that is in the description of this episode. They can also support us on Patreon at patreon.com/hitboxpod, becoming a $1 podcast producer, a $3 deluxe podcast producer. They can join the ranks of Jay Noel, GKS, and Josh Durham as deluxe podcast producers to get an additional 30-minute bonus episode. Today, we are taking a deeper look at Metaphor ReFantazio. We're going to talk about it a little bit during the episode, but I think the bulk of our discussion is going to be there. You're making a face.
Yeah, so I'm watching these videos, and I got tricked.
Hypnotic.
I got tricked because there was a bus like from the town that
was
clearly made lower. And then, that's not the one I saw. This is like a lower bus. Oh. So I thought the bus was going to be the thing that hit, but it was lower. And then as it was like clear under it, I'm like, oh, it's perfect. A truck comes up from behind. It just goes like goes through it.
It's the best, dude.
Oh, man.
It's the best.
I got to turn this off. Otherwise, I'm going to be distracted literally the whole time.
There's a lot of content on there. The guy just set up a camera. It's like some business owner that's like right on the corner. So he just has a camera and just gets all the highlights. Anyway, yeah, we're gonna talk metaphor. So if you're interested in that, that'll be on our deluxe podcast feed. If you can't support us there, that's fine. You can follow us on Twitter at HitboxPod or rate this episode in your podcast player of choice. Justin, can we go to the Metacritic Roundup?
Let's go.
Metacritic Roundup.
There's a single game in the Metacritic Roundup this week. It's called Neva, or maybe Neva, published by Devolver Digital.
Do your Michael Caine voice.
Neva.
Yeah, there you go.
That's nothing. Neva.
There's diamonds the size of tangerines, and he was stirring them out. Neva.
There you go.
Batman Begin. it's by Nomada Studio. These are the makers of Gris, or perhaps Grease. I never knew how to say it. I think the indie game.
It must be us because, I mean, two titles having names that could be pronounced multiple ways. It's got to be us. Can't be the company, right?
Absolutely not. Yeah. I think they're from Spain or something like that, which makes it...
Spawn.
España, I believe it's what it's really called. But on the PS5, it scored an 86. On the Xbox Series X, an 86. On the PC, an 85. And on the Nintendo Switch, it scored a 90. It's also coming out on the PS4, though it is unscored there. So pretty much everything with the screen, except for the Xbox One, can play this thing. Justin, do you have any interest in Neva? Neva?
I didn't, and then I did, because I realized it's about a little white wolf that you're taking around.
Yes,
and
kind of a solemn adventure with this wolf.
Yeah, and I have a little white wolf of my own. His name is Archer.
You do. You do.
And like, I'm gonna be honest. Let's take the tone down for a second. You know, sometimes you just are looking at your dog and you're like, you're getting old, man.
Yeah. Well, you have the thought about like, and it also comes around on you as well.
Yeah.
And you're like, which means I'm getting old.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So like those kind of feelings are happening, but also like Archie currently is like, he forgot how to use the stairs, but not all stairs. Just he forgot how to go up one of the flights. Like he can go the one that leads to our basement up and down, up and down. He just goes up and down them. He gets so frustrated that he can't go up the stairs. He just goes up and down. So I've been like helping him up the stairs recently, just to like show him that he can, because it's clearly a mental hurdle, not like a physical hurdle. So this Neva game reminds me of that, and I'll probably play it because of it. And it's going pretty damn well too.
It looks pretty interesting. It's basically a 2D platformer with a really kind of striking art style. And it's got this like it seems like pretty simple sword combat, but like it looks satisfying enough, and everyone's saying that the story is really emotional and great. So I'm interested. I don't know if I'm going to pick this up right now just because like there are a lot of very big games sort of at the moment. Might not be a bad idea to play as sort of maybe a palate cleanser, you know what I mean, in between things. But the scores for this just make it seem pretty spectacular, you know.
Yeah.
Which I guess is to be expected because people really liked Grease. I never played it, but
yeah, I mean, I can't even pronounce it, so. But yeah, I mean, I think it looks fun and interesting. It's a jump dash platformer game from what I can tell. Mild puzzle solving, but mostly like loose combat and platforming. I don't know. It's on my list, but I already did pick up another game that is a jump dash platformer game / Metroidvania. I recently purchased Prince of Persia Lost Crown.
Okay.
It was on sale for like $15 on Amazon or $20 on Amazon or something like that. I don't know. And it ended up being like $21 with tax. And it was a game that I heard the kind of funny people talk a lot about, that it was one of their favorite games of the year. And looking at it, it got me a lot of the vibes of Metroid Dread a lot. And they said that the game has good like traversal combat, and it looks difficult without being like too difficult, like a manageable challenge. So I'll pick that up and play it because that was something that's been on my radar that I was like, it'll be cheap one of these days. And now it was. So I bought it for my Switch.
Oh, so you have not You haven't started
it? No, I haven't started it yet. It's going to, I think it was back ordered till middle of October. So probably come next week or two. But there's just so much shit to play right now, man. You're, as you said, I think that's the biggest hurdle for me because it's to the point where I'm honestly like, I have to choose a lane through the end of the year because I just don't have time to play all these big games that are coming out.
Yeah, me too. I've got a flight coming up, I think next week or the week after, in 2 weeks. And so I was like, I got to have something good on the Switch. And so I've got two games on the Switch. One of them I'm going to do. You have anything else to say about Neva?
No. I think it looks interesting. It looks good. It looks pretty. And you're a little wolf dog named Archie. So.
Yeah, so there you go.
And if that fucking dog dies, I swear to God, it's not a spoiler. I don't know anything about this
certainly
game.
Certainly must, right?
No, you better sacrifice yourself for that dog.
Sure, it's fair.
I would do that, you know?
Yeah, no, I get it. So I've got this plane ride coming up, and I was like, ooh, I had a code that I got for the Switch port of a game called Faith the Unholy Trinity. Mm. Justin, are you familiar with Faith the Unholy Trinity?
I am not, actually.
So it's like it's kind of a compilation indie game, where basically an indie dev made just a game just called Faith in like 2018 or something like that. And it's like a 45 minute to an hour long experience that looks like it was made on the Atari 2600. So it's like very like low, like graphical fidelity sort of style, but it has these like rotoscoped cutscenes that are all very upsetting because it's like it goes from this like, you know, really low, not low quality, but like low image resolution, right? Sort of very, very blocky images to these rotoscoped sort of surreal horror things. So Faith is it's a horror game about a botched exorcism. And so it came out in 2018 originally, and then the developer made sort of two sequels, like two additional chapters. And so now it's like a trilogy basically, but it's being packaged as one game. And it has been 2022, I think, the original like Faith, the Unholy Trinity, which is like all three of the games came out. I think with the release of the third chapter, and then this is the Switch port of it. So it came out this past week. And so I picked it up, and someone at work, Christian, he mentioned it to me before I got the email with the codes in it. And when it came in, I was like, hey, is this that game you were talking to me about? And he's like, yo, yeah, 100%. And I was like, I got a flight coming up. Is this something I can play on a flight? Because he had mentioned, he's like, dude, this is like cursed. It's like fucked up. It's like, is this the sort of thing that I can play on a flight?
Yeah, let me play it on an airplane where I can't escape.
Yeah. When I was coming home from Summer Game Fest, I had two volumes of a manga called Fire Punch, which is the series that the guy who makes Chainsaw Man made before he made Chainsaw Man. And it is, like, decidedly very, very adult and mature. There's a lot of, like, to be sensitive, horrible violations of children. That's pretty explicit in this series. It's not like, I mean, it's portrayed as bad. You know what I mean? Like it's very serious and dark, but I was going to read those on the plane coming home. And I didn't because I don't remember what I did instead. I think I just played some on my Switch. Oh, 1000 Resists was out and I was playing that. I'm so fucking glad I did not open up a comic book with that in it, sort of sitting next to a person about as close as you can sit next to someone. Mm-hmm. So I was like, can I play Faith on the plane? And he's like, you should not. So I'm saving the rest of Echoes of Wisdom for the end of the month when I've got this plane stuff. So instead, I played the first episode or the first chapter of Faith, the Unholy Trinity. And it scared me so fucking bad that I was trying not to breathe the whole time I was playing it. Truly, deeply upsetting material here. It's quite good.
Oh, Jesus. can you, like, the second you said that, I'm now typing it in to watch some gameplay of it. Can you describe why you felt that way about the game? Like, what really made you affected by it to a fact where not only is it disturbing, but you also like it?
So it's so low res that, like, you know how there's just like this inherent jank that's associated with old games?
Yeah.
Like, it's like that. And there are also, like, there's like voice lines in it. Like, it's not voice acting, but it's like, you know how like voices used to be in old games where it'd be like, grab the, like jump on the Goomba.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Us.
Yeah. Where it's like not a person, but it's like a mechanical voice.
Yeah.
That's what the voice acting is in it. So it's really, really unsettling. And it also does that thing that old games do where, like, it gets very quiet because there's just, like, sometimes not music. And then, like, there will be a sound effect that happens. You're making a face. Are you watching a trailer? There will be a sound effect that happens that is way too fucking loud. You know what I mean? Like, that's just, like, a thing of the time. But also, like, it is really effective for horror. And so there's, like, not a lot of, like, jump scary stuff in it. Because if it was all jump scares, I wouldn't fuck with it, you know? But it is, like, it's extraordinarily tense as a result. So basically you play as this guy, this priest, named John something, who helped a, like, more senior priest commit an exorcism of a, like, 16-year-old girl in this house in the woods. And the exorcism went bad and the girl in the woods killed a bunch of people. And so you have returned to try and complete what you, finish what you started. But there's a lot of sort of, like, ambiguity about, like, what happened and also whether or not you're supposed to be there, because, like, you are not sanctioned by the Vatican to come do it. It seems like something that you personally are interested in doing. So the game is like exploring this, like, forest environment that's around the house, finding all of these letters and notes and stuff like that. So sort of, like, piece together the story and then going in the house, exorcising the girl kind of, and then sort of dealing with the fallout of that. It's horrible.
So where to start with this, the gameplay itself, yeah. What is the gameplay?
It's very simple. It's reminiscent of, like, an Atari 2600 game. Okay. So you are
like the E.T. it's kind of looking like. I don't know if that does anything for you, but, like,
yeah, it's a little bit more than that. I would say like it was modeled supposed to be like an Atari 2600, but it's more like an NES.
Okay.
In terms of, like, fidelity. It looks much better than, like, E.T. Like, it's like Legend of Zelda, yeah. Like the original one kind of looking. So basically you, like I said, you're walking around and you basically can just move and you can hold up your cross. And so, like, to try and, like, exercise stuff. So when you're out in the woods, there is this, I just got a notification from Discord and it made my, whole body jump because I got kind of spooked thinking about all this.
Oh. Did it say, did it say look behind you?
No, don't do that to me, please.
You just look behind you. That's why I asked. Oh, yeah, I wasn't trying to be.
I'm getting a little tense, Justin.
You were like,
So while you're exploring the woods, there is a second monster of sorts that is trying to torment you that you learn about.
It's yourself.
As you explore. So basically, like, anytime a monster shows up, you hold down the A button to pull out your little cross, and then it, like, either turns them away or exorcises them. When you get to the house, you are looking for, like, sort of, like, notable objects to exorcise, and when you do, you get, like, notes from, like, the parents who live there and like housekeepers and stuff like that, sort of explaining what's going on. And then you finally encounter the girl. Her name's Amy. And then you have to exorcise her with, it's very simple. It's like just, like, dodging out of the way and then holding the A button to sort of exorcise. But
so this,
it's really simple.
The code you got, like, this is for the Switch, like the Switch release is new, right?
Yes.
Because this game, yes. This game looks like it came out initially in 2022.
So the Trinity is Chapter 1, Chapter 2, and Chapter 3. That came out in 2022, which was, I believe, when Chapter 3 came out. Chapter 1 came out in, like, 2018, Chapter 2, I think, in 2020, and then Chapter 3 in 2022.
Got it.
So, like, this package is new, if that makes sense.
Yeah, with everything together. Because I don't even see, like, I'm on Metacritic now, and I can't see, like, an initial score for it.
I mean, this is, like, hyper indie. You know what I mean?
I mean, they have a score for Trinity Trigger. They have a score for Unholy Heights. They have a score for Trinity Fusion. They have a score for Hiding and Seeking, Faith and Tolerance After the Holocaust. That's a movie, though, not a game.
Sure. It's on Metacritic. There is a page for Faith the Unholy Trinity.
Oh, there it is.
Yeah, it's on. It's got three PC reviews. It's got a 90, a 90, and an 85. And then it has a 9.0 user rating on based off of 22 reviews. So it's great. It's very upsetting. I'm also like, I find exorcisms to be deeply, deeply upsetting. Just because they like actually happen. You know what I mean? Like it's not like it's something we made up. Like the Catholic Church does exorcisms and there's like accounts of exorcisms and stuff. And like, whether or not you believe that like the accounts of what all happened is real or because of its possession or whether it's like people acting out because of mental illness or whatever, like, you know, that's obviously up to you. But like, I think one of the weird things about being religious, specifically about being like Christian, is that like if you believe in all of the good stuff about like Christianity and like the whole religion, it also means that you believe in the bad stuff. Does that make sense? So like if you believe in angels, you also believe in demons. You have to, because like that's what the whole Bible's about. So like to me, as someone who is religious, exorcisms freak me the fuck out because like I don't know if they're like, because it's something that they do. You know what I mean? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. I do think, like, obviously, like, I don't want to, like, dissect your faith or anything like that. But I think the one of the biggest struggles for people who are religious is that binary feeling, right? Like, how there is so much gray area in belief that where do you put in your belief? But I think the fact that there have been all these accounts of this kind of stuff makes you question it for sure.
Yeah. So like I said, I was playing this and I was like trying not to breathe. Mm. I was so fucking like freaked out. And Elena had just left. And so I was playing it, and yesterday was a pretty windy day around here. So like I finished the first chapter and I was like, I'm done. I was like, I'm out for now. So I'm going to play more of it. Hopefully I'll finish it either next week or the week after. Cause it's also like, it's pretty short. The first chapter was like 45 minutes to an hour. It's my understanding the other two chapters are of a similar length, but,
yeah. How long to beat says about 5 hours. It looks like it's $34. Is that true?
I don't know.
This might be a physical release, but, look right now at Target, I can purchase it for $34.99, which seems a little expensive, but if the game truly is
digitally
digitally
it is $15 okay. on Switch.
So there you go. Yeah.
Yeah, it's on sale right now until Halloween, so right now it's $13.49. It was fun too, like geez, this is rated T by the ESRB. That's fucking crazy.
Well, it's rated RP by Target.
Good. No, this is fucked up. This is the first time I've ever seen it's a blood and gore drug reference language suggestive themes violence T. That's crazy. Anyway, this is the like I am in the mood for kind of spooky games, and so I was like, this is perfect. Like, this will be great for sort of getting that Halloween kick in me. Yeah, Faith, man, upsetting.
It's pretty good. Like, when you say upsetting, I just need to know, is it something because of your connection to the exorcisms that's bothering you, the tone of it, or like, is the content like truly like cringy?
I think anytime you sort of invite like not violence against children, but like putting violence and children in the same space, I think it's always kind of like chilling. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean by that?
Yeah.
And so like that is where it comes from. I also, like I said, I think I'm just like personally freaked out by exorcisms, you know? But it's also like the combination of the rotoscoped animations, the fact that it's so like lo-fi that like it feels like there's all this like kind of like jank to it that's like intentional. The voices in the game are very freaky. You have like the voice of this sort of like forest monster is just like screaming Latin at you when it like shows up to attack you, which is scary. You know what I mean? There's a lot of layers to what makes it scary. And yeah, like I said, it is upsetting just in the sense that like you are returning to exercise a child who's going to like scream at you and like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I want to know exactly, because I'm very interested in playing this game, because like you, I do like playing horror games during this time of year. Dead Space remake I have recently booted up.
It's on PS Plus.
Yeah, so I recently booted that up. I also have your copy of that game that I need to get back to you at some point.
Oh, so. Remake. Well, I've been playing it so much that
you knew about it.
What else have you been playing, Justin?
I can't talk about these games separate from each other because they are kind of connected to me in a certain sense. So I played more of the Plucky Squire and Astrobot. Specifically, I beat the Plucky Squire. And it's so hard for me to like compare these two games to each other because they're different, similar, but the reasons I like them make sense for me as a gamer, which ones I like more than the other. So the Plucky Squire is kind of a fun, hot mess. And
the Plucky Squire is?
The Plucky Squire is, yeah.
Okay.
The fun part of it is that the whole 2D to 3D. So again, if you don't know, I kind of talked about this a couple weeks ago. The Plucky Squire is this traditional, original 2D Zelda-like game that has this element about it, which you can jump out of the book that the story is taking place in and then interact with the real world, which is this like 3D kind of like also top-down game. And the whole mechanic about it is that you are a character in a story that gains the ability to leave that story and influence the real world outside of the story. The characters in the book don't like can't see you leave. They don't know there's a real world there. You can tell them about it, but it's like they can't quite comprehend it. And the puzzles kind of play with that mechanic literally the whole time to varying degrees of interest. And the thing about it is that the game itself, the puzzles itself, because it's mostly a puzzle platformer with some combat in it. That's not even a platformer. It's a puzzle game with some light combat in it. The puzzles are never actually hard in the game. Sometimes it's kind of obvious what you have to do, but doing it can be a little bit of a trek. For example, there is this one puzzle that you're in a cave, and one of the mechanics has you kind of changing words in a sentence in order to alter the world in some way. Like there'll be a sentence in the storybook that says, "A large broken pillar stood in your way." And then the word large is like glowing and you can hit the word large and you can replace it with a word from another sentence that says the small pillar stood in your way. And that way you can get through it without having to actually like be blocked by it. Some of that stuff is never really hard. You just have to like find out where that other word is. You know what the solution is, but like getting to that word can sometimes be challenging. And occasionally they might have something that's a little like interesting in which you have to basically interact with the book. You start getting these upgrades that allow you to, from the outside, the real world, do things like put a stamp on the book that freezes whatever you stamped. Or you can drop a bomb in the book that you can detonate whenever you want. Or you can pick up the book and literally tilt it and shake it to move some of the obstacles in the actual book around so you can explore the world in a different way. So they kind of build all these things onto each other in a very fun way. But again, none of it's actually hard. And the thing that makes it a mess to me is the fact that the technical issues get in the way from me enjoying the game. And many games have technical issues, but this one, whenever you are doing something when you're outside of the book, you often have a lot of options of what you can do. Do you want to turn the page to go back to an earlier part of the chapter you're in and maybe find a word on a page? Do you need an object that's on the last page, but you need to bring that object to the first page? The puzzles are never really like meant for you to solve them like you're in a sandbox. They're all really linear. And sometimes when your 3D brain decides that, ooh, I could solve the puzzle by doing this, the game doesn't recognize that creativity. And when you start doing things with the book that you're not supposed to be doing at the time, the game will freeze.
Yeah. So there's only one solution to the puzzles?
Usually, yeah. It's not like there's a million different ways. Yeah, okay. Like for the words, you can do something like instead of saying the large pillar and change it to the small pillar, you can do the cheese pillar, and the pillar will turn into cheese, and you might get an achievement or something like that. But it's not like actually going to solve the puzzle in a different way. So whenever you're like going outside of the world and like messing around with the book and then go back in, it will sometimes freeze. It will sometimes, one time I jumped back in the book and my character appeared and just fell through the 2D world and then just was disappeared. I couldn't do anything with it and I had to restart it. And it was mostly an inconvenience, but when you have enough of those inconveniences that start adding 5 minutes, 6 minutes, 10 minutes to your play time, That's stuff that's hard for me to forgive, because even if I can go back and solve that puzzle quicker, I don't want to do it again. And I know that the reason I had to do it again was because it was an issue with the game, not an issue with my ability or talent. It was a technical issue that wasn't meant to happen. And it was like, again, I can excuse a lot of technical issues. I fucking love Cyberpunk when I played it the first time. But this one was like generally getting in the way of my enjoyment of it, to the point where at the very end of the game, I was doing the credits, and the credits were kind of like in the book, and I went to skip them, and then it took me to like a 2D version of the credits, but then it froze, so I couldn't finish the credits. And usually I'm that kind of person who's like, is there going to be something at the end of this? Is there going to be an achievement at the end of this? I would go back and watch them again, but I'm like, fuck this. I don't need it. I'm done. And even to the point where if someone asked me if you recommend it to them, my recommendation for this game is I enjoyed it, but I have no interest in platinuming it.
Oof. See, that's interesting. Cause like also like for me, when the final thing that happens in a game is something like that, I'm like, yeah, fuck
yeah,
this.
Yeah, I mean, there's no reason like, for me to go back, right?
No.
But even that being said, before the credit crash, I wouldn't have platinumed it anyway, because the platinum requirements require you to like go back in other pages and interact a lot with the book on the outside to like find like hidden things everywhere. And that was just something that I didn't think was fun. And I knew it was something that would give me more technical issues, that even if the achievements are easy, because I looked through the list, it was pretty easy to get all the achievements, to get the platinum. I don't think it would be worth it, because I'd be fighting against not what the developers wanted. I'd be fighting against technical issues.
Yeah. So my takeaway from like a lot of the reviews that came out for this was it's good, not great.
Yeah.
Is that where you lie, or are you more of like, it's fine, not good?
I would say I'm going to put a number score to it just to kind of help. Yeah, I would probably score it an 8 out of 10 if it wasn't for the technical issues. Like, I liked it. There was a lot of good stuff with it. It was a fun platformer. But I think the technical issues really make me like consider, is this something that I want people to play? And on top of that, I don't know what the audience for this game is. I don't know the type of gamer who needs to play this game. A lot of people in the reviews were saying like it's a good game to play with like a younger gamer, because a lot of the puzzles are pretty straightforward and simple. But at the same time, sometimes what is required for you as the gamer is too advanced for a younger, inexperienced gamer. The litmus test: would I have my wife play this game? Absolutely fucking not. And it's not because she's like incapable of playing games or incapable of solving puzzles. There's enough frustration that I dealt with that I know that she would run into and she would be frustrated with. And then you add the technical problems on top of it. It just, I don't think that would be like a enjoyable experience for her. And if it's not enjoyable for her, is it going to be enjoyable for younger gamers, gamers who maybe want like an intro to this type of style or whatever? I don't know. And the thing is, I liked about it, I like the creativity in the puzzles. Like, it really was fun and unique with how they did that. I don't think I've ever quite been in a game like this before, because the whole narrative is kind of like a meta thing. It's like you are the hero of this world that it always wins, and the bad guy is sick of always losing and basically goes out of the book to try to rewrite history. Mm-hmm. And the story is enough and interesting enough, and there's enough fun mini games in it throughout and enough stuff that's happening different every single page that I never was bored of it. But I did at plenty of times get fed up with a lot of the issues with it. It is very creative. I mean, without like spoiling stuff, there's like a battle in it that you're literally like fighting a giant moth in the real world and you're floating around trying to kill it. And it doesn't like necessarily make sense, but like in order to get to that point, you have all these like upgrades that you have for a couple times throughout the game that you put on all at once. And you basically go out to attack this moth in the real world. And it was like this really cool, like climactic moment in the game that built on everything that happened. The IGN review, I only watched it because someone said that the game was pretty good, but the review for IGN had a problem with the last level. And I was like, what last level are they talking about? Because there's like 8 chapters in the game. It's not super long. And basically, near the end of the game, you get to this point where you get reset from all of your character progress. Like, you lose all your upgrades and you're back in the world, and then you have to basically go out in the real world and find your powers again. And the IGN reviewer was like, well, at the end of the game, it feels really bad to be powered down and like get all that stuff. But I actually found it was pretty cool because at that point of the game, you have all these tools at your disposal that you kind of forgot about some of the mechanics, and they kind of like refunnel the puzzles in a way, and they switch up the order that you get the abilities. So you have like a late power ability that you get first, and then it like changes how you have to like solve puzzles because you don't have your other things. Like, you don't get your sword for a while. So like you're solving puzzles in like unique and different ways. And it did like make me think in a lot of cool and interesting ways differently, because you're literally thinking 3D brain, like, how do I like break this? But at the same point, the game doesn't allow you to break it, which I wish it did.
Yeah, that's unfortunate, because I think like there is nothing wrong with a puzzle game that is like pointing you directly, that is saying like there's only one solution to this. Like, I really liked Lorelei and the Laser Eyes from earlier this year. One solution to all those puzzles, you know. But it's tough when a game is saying be creative. Oh, but not that way.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of how I feel about Echoes of Wisdom. Be creative. There is only one solution, though, so keep that in mind, you know.
Yeah.
Which isn't exactly the case, but it's overall sounds like you like
it. I did. There are just so many games better about it this year, I would say, that again, Echoes of Wisdom, I would recommend that game more strongly over Plucky Squire. And in a world where both exist, you should play Echoes of Wisdom before you play Plucky Squire. But if you have the PlayStation Plus Premium or whatever the heck tier it's on, maybe try it and see if the technical issues get in your way. It is unique enough. They also have a total...
That's where you played this, right?
Yeah. They also have a total Gandalf moment in it. They have a cool wizard character named Moonbeard who, like, is pretty cool. And then, like, I don't want to spoil the story, but there's a moment that is pretty, like, oof. But then they, like, come back with this awesome Gandalf moment. It was pretty cool.
Nice.
But the reason I can't talk about the Plucky Squire without Astrobot is I felt so compelled to play through the Plucky Squire to finish the story. Astrobot, it's a better playing game. It's a better looking game. It's a cleaner, polished experience. But me getting through that game, it literally feels like torture. I feel like this is been a month of me saying that at this point. But like, it is literal torture to play that game. It feels like at times. Now, granted, there's some fun things about it, but like the connection of everything, I just don't feel like it's building towards something big. And part of that reason happens that in every world in Astrobot, you get like a unique power that you don't keep forever, and it's just kind of built for that world. And there's some crossover with other levels between old powers, but like the worlds just don't seem like they're not fun to explore. Really, there's not that much stuff around them. They're pretty linear in terms of what they want you to do. And like, it is just like get to the end and along the way find a couple of these like little side paths that give you some special upgrades and stuff like that. And if you miss one of the upgrades, have fun playing the level again, because you got to play the level again in order to get these upgrades.
Yeah.
So like I don't think this would be a particularly fun platinum, though they do make things easy. Like you can pay some coins at the beginning of a level once you beat it to like mm-hmm. have a radar tell you where all the stuff is in the world that just kind of like beeps when something's near. So they do try to make it a little bit painless with that. But like the ultimate just story of it, I just don't know. There's one thing I really do like in the game though, that I wish there was almost more of this. It's kind of like a Pikmin kind of mechanic. There's like this hub world where your ship has crashed and you basically throughout the whole game are trying to repair your ship again. I know, big shock, Astrobot repairing your ship. But there are these like, based on how many of the Astrobots you rescue in the different levels, there's usually anywhere from like 1 to 8 Astrobots in a level that you rescue. They all go back to your mm-hmm. home planet once you rescue them. And the more Astrobots you have, the more things you can do in this base planet area. Like you can... like cross bridges. If you have like 100 of them, you can like swing across things. It like changes how you interact with the world in a way that actually makes collecting all the Astrobots kind of like fun and worth it. I wish there was more of that throughout all the worlds that actually made collecting the Astrobots in the individual levels make sense mm-hmm. or if there was a purpose for it. Now, granted, it is in the home world, but it's so like removed from everything that it doesn't really feel like a mechanic that I'm using frequently. I just wish there was some sort of connective tissue, whether it's a story, upgrades that build on each other, or something that made progressing in the game make sense or make it worth yeah. it or make me want to like keep doing a different level. Because now whenever I get another level, I'm like, oh, great. I got to do this, the whole new world. I wonder what it's going to be. And some people might be like, oh, what are the creative spin are they going to take on this world? Me, I'm just like, the fuck? I'm like, why? I'm playing another yeah. random sandbox that doesn't really let me do anything.
So I'm in terms of my budget for games from right now to the end of the year, it's not huge. This is $70, right?
Yeah, I think it's 60.
Is it 50?
I think it's 60.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is an expensive undertaking,
yeah.
Essentially. I don't know, like... I'm always open to being surprised. I'm always open to being convinced. But like, I don't know what Astrobot is going to have to do to make me go like, damn, this is one of the best games of the year. It seems like it's a good platformer. But like, I bet like I worry that if I play this, I'm going to go, yeah, it was fun.
Yeah.
And then never think about it again.
Did you play Super Mario Wonder?
I did not fuck with Super Mario Wonder.
Okay. I would say it reminds me very similar to that kind of game. In terms mm-hmm. of like what you're doing in the game, in terms of the open world of that game, in terms of the plot of that game, I would say.
Yeah.
And there's fun in it, but I think for me, there's when I'm playing a game, for me to really connect with it and want to play it, it has to be more than just fun.
Yeah.
I know that sounds weird.
I get
but
it.
Like, there's got to be something that is like driving me to come back and play it. Otherwise, it's yeah. just I'm forcing myself to play it. If I'm playing a multiplayer game, there's some kind of like progression that's involved with it. Or you're playing, hanging out with your friends, or you're getting better at the game. This one, yeah. I don't know if I'm necessarily feeling I'm getting better because all these new mechanics are just changing how I'm playing the game a little bit. There are some challenging platforming sections that they have, but even then, it's like once you beat that level, does it translate to other levels? A little bit, but like I don't know. It just doesn't like have – I don't feel satisfied playing the game. It's like you're eating really bad junky food, and then you're done eating it, and then you're like, oh, my tummy feels bad. Now, it's not hurting me mm-hmm. to play. I just don't feel satisfied when I'm done with it.
Yeah. Okay. We will see. I mean, like I'm interested in trying it out, but like,
yeah,
you and I think have very similar gaming tastes for better and for worse, which means that like, I think I'm probably going to feel exactly the same way you do about this.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong. It's still a good game, but it's not compelling me to yeah. finish it in the way that the Plucky Squire did, which on literally almost every aspect is worse than Astrobot. It just doesn't have a story okay. or a connective tissue or anything like that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Justin, something that I am feeling compelled to finish Silent Hill 2 remake.
Oh, what? How did this start?
Elena asked. She's like, hey, this game looks interesting. And I was like, you have no idea. And she was like, she was like, can we play it? And I was like, absolutely. We don't play games together very often anymore. So I was like, absolutely. So we've been playing it. We've about 2.5 hours so far. And so far, it is pretty good. It is a third person remake / remix of Silent Hill 2. And in my opinion, the best thing it does is it makes me go, damn, Silent Hill 2 is a good game. You know what I mean? Yeah. Which, like, this game is so far doesn't have like a whole lot of original ideas, but it's a remake. So that's how that goes. But it just makes me go like, damn, the writing in Silent Hill 2 and the imagery in Silent Hill 2 is so fucking good. You know what I mean?
So you said there's nothing new in it.
Yeah.
My question to you is, if you are recommending someone playing this game, Silent Hill 2, would you say they should play the new one or the original?
I think it's hard to tell so far because I'm still early. To my understanding, this is a good remake, but it does not replace the original. I think you look at like The Last of Us Part 1 versus Last of Us on the PS3. I think The Last of Us Part 1 kind of replaces the original because like it like enhances what already makes that game so good. And so like the compelling part about that game, which is those performances and those characters, right?
And the original Last of Us is like still a good game. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, 100%, yeah, right? Yeah. So it's just a new coat of paint, right? But like, in my opinion, it's kind of like, if you don't have The Last of Us 1, get Part 1. Like, it's going to be up to the standard, like modern standards. And also, yeah, again, like Last of Us 1 already played well. With this, there is something to the lo-fi jank of the original that is still upsetting. That is still like really, really well crafted and well made. This seems to have a bit more of a reliance on like jump scares and like startles than the original ever did, which I think like jump scares are like, I'm not able to think of like a good analogy here, but like, I do not like jump scares. I do not think they add anything except sometimes. And I know that's like hard to like put your finger on, but like they're like an appropriate jump scare, I think, works really well. Like, I think, do you ever play? I didn't play it, but I've seen the playthrough of it. Eternal Darkness.
Yeah.
On the GameCube.
Yeah, I haven't played it, but I'm familiar.
There's a scene where like halfway through the game. So basically you're exploring this house and like every so often you get like drawn in, like the main part of the game, like you get drawn into like the different stories about like, I think it's like your relatives or something like that. It's kind of Assassin's Creed-y. But like each time you finish one of the chapters, you explore a different area of the house. And one area of the house, you walk into a bathroom and very quickly it zooms in on the bathtub and it's like a loud scream sound and it's your character in the bathtub bleeding out. And then it just like flashes away and it's like, what the fuck was that? That's a jump scare that's really, really effective and scary because the game isn't jump scary. You know what I mean? So like it kind of comes out of nowhere and it like adds to the mood and the environment of like, what the fuck is happening here? Whereas this is just like, all right, well, the street lamp went out. Yeah, I guess that would be kind of unnerving, huh? You know, oh, that really loud gust of wind closed all the windows. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I think jump scares are easy horror. Easy is not always bad, but like if they're relying too heavily on it, then I think it's bad.
I'm not scared of jump scares. They are effective because I'm startled, because screaming when I'm not expecting you to scream is startling. It doesn't make me afraid. In fact, it kind of actually cuts the tension because I go, oh, that's all you were building up to. It was just startling me. I thought you were going to do something that was actually unnerving and scary. You know, again, it's not to say that the remake is bad. I'm enjoying it actually a lot, but like I can still see like these are the people who made the medium. You know, like in that regard, I don't think it replaces the original. That said, the original is hard to come by. You can only play the HD remake of it or remaster of it, which like is not ideal. I mean, like if it's between that or not playing at all, I guess I'd play that. But I'm interested in it. I'm enjoying it. I want to see more of it before I can really definitively say, though. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. Can you just tell me, give me a top-down perspective about the game and how it's set up?
In what regard?
Like the story.
Oh, do you not know?
A little bit, but no, like I prefer your interpretation of it over someone else's.
Basically, just the plot is very simple. This guy James received a letter from his wife asking him to come meet him in our special place, Silent Hill. It's a place they went on vacation once. And I think it's when, like, before, like, as they were, like, right when they got married or something like that. And as he notes in the opening cutscene of the game, that's pretty odd because my wife died 3 years ago. And so it's in her handwriting. It is unmistakably hers. So he goes to this town, Silent Hill, and he's looking for his wife. And as he starts looking for her, he runs into other people who are also there, who are seemingly on their own kind of journeys, and he's being tormented and like attacked by like monsters and stuff like that. And it is sort of an exploration of guilt and trauma in regards to his wife's death, but also like question mark, like, is she dead? Like, what happened? Like, well, how is she writing him this letter? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, I think that sounds quite interesting. And then it's also like a third person combat game, correct?
Yes, there's combat in it. I have not. Eventually, you get a gun. I'm right at the part where you get a gun. I don't have the gun yet. It is a 3D like a melee combat thing to start, and then you get a gun, and then but ammo is scarce and whatever. So I haven't gotten to any of the shooting yet. So we'll see about that. But the melee combat is not very good. But hey, that's kind of just like the original, you know. It is very simple. It's just mashing the attack button and dodging out of the way when the enemy is gearing up to attack. So far, I've only fought against one enemy type. They're these like torsos wearing high heels that like try to like ram themselves into you, or they like kind of like spew acid at you. So you just got to like dodge out of the way. It's a simple, like, you just hit the circle button and you just kind of do a sidestep when they're gearing up to attack you. And then you just mash on the attack button. So there is something kind of unnerving with it, though. And I think this is in the original as well, where if you knock an enemy down and you like sort of beat it into the ground, most games, when an enemy is dead, they'll sort of like stop targeting the enemy. You know what I mean? Like, it's a pretty simple concept, right? Like, in a game where you are like locking onto an enemy, once the enemy is dead, you can't lock onto them anymore. In this, you can attack a dead enemy as long as you want. And that's kind of interesting because it makes you wonder, like, have I killed this thing yet or not? You know, because the enemies will sometimes scurry away, like, after you've sort of like knocked them to the ground. So it's like this thing about like, how much do I have to hit this thing for it to be dead forever? You know?
Yeah.
It's kind of unnerving. It's cool.
Are there any like significant changes other than controlling better and looking better than the original game?
Not that I've experienced. I mean, yeah, it controls differently, right? Just because it is a third person game, like a third person over the shoulder kind of game, as opposed to a fixed camera angle game. Mm-hmm. It also, like, it does expand a little bit of the town. So there's no waypoints in the game. This is like how the original one was too. Like, you just hit a button and you open a map and you just have to like figure out where you are and walk.
Are there stamps?
Stamps? No. Oh,
damn it.
at least not that I've encountered. But so like when you encounter an area, like if you encounter like a roadblock, you write the road, like James just writes the roadblock in on the map. Or if you find like a door with like a key, like a keypad lock, like he like writes keypad question mark and like puts an arrow at where that is. So like, it's really useful for like remembering like where things are and that sort of thing. But it does expand the town a little bit by making a lot more of the buildings like places that you can go inside. I haven't decided how I feel about that yet. It does mean that there's like more to explore and see, but a lot of the time, like, there isn't much to find other than just like health drinks.
Yeah.
So far, There's the occasional handwritten note. Elena went, goes, damn, was there currency handwritten notes? Because they're just everywhere. Like, oh, it's like 2001. It passes the vibe check, even though the vibes are different because they're just like different kinds of games. It does like have that similar feeling, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And then the last kind of just general question I have here is the difference between the two games, like as you remember them. Is the way the story is told the same? Or are we told it in
so far,
a different...
Yes.
Okay, cool.
I do know that there are some sequences that are different, but that have been modernized in new ways to sort of like, you know, to reimagine like what this sequence might be. I've heard that that it's handled well, but I haven't gotten to any of that yet.
Is Elena enjoying watching it with you?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Okay. Because it's the sort of thing that like you dissect, right? Because there is a lot of stuff that's like left up to interpretation. Like the enemies, for example, that we've encountered, like I said, they're these like torsos that are sort of wearing like leotards that kind of have like their legs exposed and they're wearing high heels. And so it's this sort of thing about like,
I'm in love,
what is
the stripper?
But like James's wife was sick for a very long time. And, and like, did he maybe have these like sexual desires for other people? Or maybe for his own wife, but obviously she couldn't meet those desires. And like, it just makes you ask these questions about this guy and like how he feels about his own, like how he feels about those desires. Like, obviously, like it's not one of these things where like, and it's so like hot and sexy. It's like, it's upsetting to look at, you know?
Yeah.
So we've enjoyed like dissecting that and talking about that, because also the game doesn't give you an answer. You know what I mean? Like, you can play the game and just walk through and never think about it. But it's a lot of fun because we are talking about that and sort of like, it's almost like a book club a little bit.
Is it done better than Alan Wake 2?
In terms of what?
Like how they kind of like make you interpret what you're seeing.
I don't know. I would say that like they're of similar caliber.
Okay.
But it's the sort of thing where like, the interpretations that I have for this game are based off the first, are based off the original, and this is not adding anything new to it,
okay,
at least so far.
Okay.
So like, the first one is like is perfect at doing that. Alan Wake 2 is also very, very good at that. But this is not like a new take on that idea, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I'm still interested to play it. The problem is it's coming out at a horrible time. In between so many other games that are coming out that I'd rather play.
Dragon Age right around the corner.
I mean, really right now, I guess we can transition, but do I want to play Metaphor or do I want to play Dragon Age? That's the thing that is really stuck with me right now.
Yeah. Let's briefly talk about Metaphor, just because we're going to be talking about it a lot more in the bonus episode. It's good, man. I'm at almost 40 hours. Literally, I texted you 30 minutes after we stopped recording. Yes, the last week, I encountered a story beat that was like fucking perfect. It was so good. The writing was great. The acting was great. Like the whole scene, it like all came together, and I was like, wow, this is really good. If you're playing it, it's at the end of the second dungeon, where it's like, damn, you got fucking hands, Metaphor. I'm liking it a lot. I'm playing a lot of it. I still don't think it's better than like Persona 5. I don't know if it's better than Persona 3 Reload, but I am really thoroughly enjoying it. I don't know how to feel about Dragon Age. I've never played any of those games. I know you are a big fan of Dragon Age
Inquisition.
Yeah. So I can't say whether or not like what's going to resonate with you more, but
yeah. So with, when you say you don't like it as much as Persona 3 Reload and Persona 5, is it in the same caliber? It's just a preference thing for you? Or do you think the quality of that game does not hold up to those other two?
I think it's preference stuff. Mm. The vibe is just different, right? Like the music, I couldn't sing you any of the tracks from Metaphor. That's not to say they aren't distinct and like interesting, but it is just like, it doesn't like scratch the same itch for me. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And then also like the characters, I like the characters in Metaphor, but I don't think they're as strong as the ones in the Persona games. And I think it's because they are a little bit less flawed. Like they're a little bit more perfect. The one character I really like, his name's Heisme. And he is, I'm sure you've seen him in the marketing. He's like a little bat bunny guy. He's great because he has this very complicated sort of past. I like Stroll. I like Hulkenberg, the other two party members that you get right off the bat. I like them a lot, but like they don't have as much going for them. And like, I've completed a lot of their like individual story arcs and stuff like that. So I'm just like, I don't know if they're going to get a whole lot more depth. You know, maybe they will eventually, but 40 hours in, they're like not like incredibly strong characters.
Yeah,
they're good, but I just, in my opinion, I don't find
you're
them
not
to be as strong
connecting
as
with them
those
in
casts.
The same kind of way. Yeah. So the big sticking point for me, and the reason why I'm interested for a bonus show today, I've been kind of interested in it, is to like kind of talk to you like about some of the more like minutia about it. But Dragon Age Inquisition is like one of my favorite games of all time. BioWare is one of my favorite studios of all time. However, I have zero faith in BioWare as of late. So when people start talking about the Dragon Age being something that is good, not just good, potential game of the year candidate, because a lot of the previews that were coming out was nothing but praise for it.
Seems pretty strong.
It kind of like reprogrammed what I was expecting for this game. And like, maybe this is back to what BioWare actually is. Maybe this is going to be hitting some of the things I like about Inquisition. I already heard some of the combat stuff is not what I'm expecting, with like the RTS kind of like option to like control individual characters on the battlefield. So that kind of scares me a little bit, because I really did enjoy that combat style. But I'm kind of just waiting for reviews right now, because if they're anything that's like, this is touching old school BioWare, that's going to be something I need to play, because again, Inquisition, one of my favorite games of all time. Yeah. So when I'm thinking of Persona, one of the things that always worries me in the back of my mind with it is, am I going to wait for the Game of the Year edition to come out and then never end up playing it?
Yeah. That's the thing with all Atlas games.
Yeah.
Is like, in 2 years, there's going to be another version of this game. It's not going to be DLC. It's going to be the same game with
better
10 hours of stuff tacked onto
it. And better, because don't you think Royal's better than the original?
Yeah, like, yeah,
and I
easily.
Would assume Reload's better than the original. Not that they're going to come out with another
version of it,
but like, yeah, so that's the sticking point. But I also fully am aware that if I don't play it now, I never will play it, because that's just the kind of person I am. So I really have to look at myself in the mirror and be like, is this game going to be something that is going to sustain myself for 80 to 100 hours? Because that's the real problem. Not so much me wanting to play the game or not. Can I commit to this being the only big game I'm going to probably play till the end of the year? I don't know if I can.
Right.
Well, if I can. I don't know if that's where I want to put my focus as a gamer, with something like Dragon Age coming out that could be pretty good. And there's that Star Wars Outlaw thing I'm really waiting for a Black Friday sale for.
Oh, it's going to be $20, dude. Like, I'm the same way. I'm going to, like, if it dips to probably more like 30 because it's brand new. But, like, I'll pick that up for 30 bucks.
Easily.
And I'll probably have a really good time with it. Yeah, it's tough. And obviously, like, you know this, like, it's whatever you want, man.
Well, no, yeah, but like,
and you know, of course,
I don't want it to be a situation with when I bought Yakuza, like a whatever the dragon, the new one that came out, and I like it. Yeah. I enjoyed it. It just was one of those things that I didn't have the mental capacity for an hour cutscene or like these like big like things in there to like keep my attention with it. And while I want to go back and play that, I just don't know if I'm going to want to with all the other stuff coming out, because what a fucking crazy year.
This is the same way though, of like, because maybe you don't know, I mean, just because you haven't played them, but like Atlas games, like Persona specifically, is like, okay, I've completed the dungeon and now I know that the next time I go to sleep and like there's gonna be like 30 to 45 minutes of story, and then it's gonna get me to the next thing, you know. So like, I just finished one last night and I was like, I got like 30 minutes before I go to bed. And it's like, I'm going to hold off on doing that. Because like, it is time to pay attention, time to read, you know?
And that's not a bad thing for me, but like
no,
with
of course not.
How busy I have been and my free time has gone to grad school instead of school, I don't know if I have the mental capacity to play something like that. More than one thing like that for the rest of the year.
Yeah, and it's tough too, just because it's like, I don't know about you, like when I've done a lot of work, I'm tired.
I don't
want to like have to sit and do a bunch of reading and do a bunch of like engaging and whatever. I just want to kind of relax, but
and play the game so Faith, the Unholy Trinity.
I know it's late in the episode, but do you want to talk about some news?
Let's do it.
Game Freak was hacked. Let me just read you this headline from IGN. You'll get the gist of it. Pokemon developer Game Freak reportedly hacked stolen data on unannounced games, as well as Nintendo Switch 2 codename leaked online. So this is by Wesley Yin Poole. Basically, Game Freak was hacked by an outside actor. There was a lot of company information that was leaked, not just Pokemon related things, but like, as the headline says, like the Nintendo Switch 2 code name, as well as a lot of employees' personal data, which is never good. I mean, we think back to the Insomniac leaks, like that was a big deal, the personal data that was taken. That said, no publication is going to be sharing that information. I think like a lot of people kind of showed their funny bones when all that went down with the Insomniac stuff. We're like, no, IGN is not reporting on the personal information of people that was leaked, but they are going to report on some of the stuff that comes out of this. The like Pokemon data leak stuff. There was a fuck ton of things here. What exactly jumped out to you?
The concrete things that jumped out to me, which are things that aren't like necessarily things I was shocked by, was the Heart Gold Soul Silver, right? Is that the whatever those games coming out in the X and Y, specifically for X and Y? Those are games that I've wanted to play for some time. But whenever it's like thinking about going back to play them, it's been a little rough for me to like actually go and pull out my DS at that point and play those games.
Yeah.
So I
to clarify, their source code was leaked.
Yeah.
So people are like playing them on like PC and stuff like that. Like it's yeah.
So I think that is something that is interesting to me. But also I think obviously some of the bigger Nintendo stuff that's come out is quite interesting, like the Switch 2 codename leak and stuff like that. Not that we don't know there's a Switch 2, everyone, but the potential that the next Pokemon game is going to be cross-gen is interesting to me, because I think that, I don't think that necessarily tells you what Nintendo's strategy is, but I think it shows you that it's not going to just be backwards compatible necessarily. I think it's going to be like there might be a two SKU idea for this, with it being like with what they've done with all of their cross gen games, just par for the course with that. Which, as a consumer, I get it. I don't think I'll be offended by it, because that's what Nintendo has always done. It's not like they're taking something away from me, but it does kind of like suck that I do not think this is going to be something, again, not confirmed, but it seems to me it's going to be two separate SKUs of the same game.
Yeah. There's a lot to this too. Like, in addition to all of that, like there was leaks about apparently a sequel to the Detective Pikachu movie, with like its full plot breakdown and stuff, and like who was supposed to be directing it. It was supposed to come out in 2024. This article says like, so it's unclear what happened to it. There's a lot to this. One of the more interesting aspects to this is there was a lot of like lore that was just never published from just like random Pokemon stuff. I find that I don't like whenever Pokemon gets into like mythology and like history, because that stuff to me is uninteresting to think about. Like, I just like the idea of like the world of Pokemon, and because like the second you start to, in my opinion, break down like where it all comes from and stuff like that, it's just not what I find to be interesting about the series. But so there was some non-released, which means it's non-canon, storytelling about the creation of Pokemon and evolution and all that sort of stuff. I'm going to read you the beginning of this article on Forbes by Paul Tassi here, titled "Pokemon Typhlosion Goes Viral After Game Freak Leak for the Weirdest Possible Reason." I don't even know where to start here. Game Freak has been hacked and countless files have been released, which unfortunately includes some personal information about its employees. But it also includes everything from unused concept art and scrapped lore stories from the universe, and one in particular has gone a bit viral, more than a bit. That would be a tale about Typhlosion, the gold/silver starter evolution, which I definitely picked growing up. I also picked Charizard before that. I like fire, what can I say? But now my memories might be ...tainted a bit. Fans have discovered some sort of lost lore story about Typhlosion, which, well, here's a brief excerpt. A long time ago, when the boundary between Pokemon and humans was unclear... Okay, nope, I'm going to stop right there. Yes, this is going where you think it's going, a relationship between a human and a Pokemon, that kind of relationship, but it's even weirder than you think. A young girl is tricked by the shape-shifting Bakufun, Typhlosion, into thinking that he's a human. Eventually, she apparently has a child with him, and she's called his wife. Her father eventually comes and kills the Bakufun, and when she returns to the village, she and her half-Pokemon child is teased by the men in the village, who at one point cover it in fur skins. They run into the forest and are never seen again. Just a lot of very odd Pokemon lore here. What do you think of this, Justin?
I think one of the things with Pokemon, as you were saying, is when you really start to like go into the anime and think about like what happens in the anime, things just don't make fucking sense. What are you eating? What are you eating, Ash?
Yes, yes. Or it's that idea of like, okay, Pikachu is the electric mouse Pokemon that implies that mice exist, but Pokemon are the only, like, there's no animals.
Right, right.
So that, why, what is a mouse for them?
So, yeah, 100%. Like, it just creates this, like, world of, like, weirdness that when you really start to look into, like, some of the plot lines, Typhlosion or not, it just doesn't make sense. And I think there's plenty of stuff that you can psychoanalyze. Ash's mom and Mr. Mime relationship stuff.
Yeah, what's up with that?
Like, there's plenty that you can, like, start to, like, say, like, this is weird. I think this is funny. Is this something that is, like, worrisome? Is this something that is like out of the realm of anything that I would expect from Pokemon? I don't know. No, not really. I mean, Pokemon's a world where there's fucking Poke gods in there that talk, that speak human. Mewtwo is someone who is an experiment who, like, you know, is trying to like attack humans or whatever. Like, there's so many weird things already in Pokemon that this doesn't like make me bat an eye, though it does make me laugh. And specifically, I love the Typhlosion that Paul Tassi used. It's like that, like blushing Typhlosion character or whatever, which is pretty funny.
It's one of those things where people are like taking this and running with it, as you said. Yeah, like it's not out of line for like what a lot of other Pokemon lore stuff is. Like if you read the like Pokemon like descriptions for any of the ghost Pokemon, it's always like, this guy kills children. And it's like, okay, Dusclops, thank you. Like, like glad you're on my team. So this isn't like out of the realm of possibility, but I do read this and go, yeah, there's a reason this was not included in the game.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. I hope it was a thing of censorship.
Yeah. And it's also one of those things too, where I've seen a lot of people talking about like, oh my gosh, this breaks the canon wide open. It doesn't. Cause this is not canon, because it was not published as canon. You know what I mean? Like, but then, even then, like I said, I'm just completely uninterested in Pokemon canon stuff like that anyway. Like you were saying, like Arceus is like God. That fucks me up in terms of like, I can't with that. So
when you say like the whole idea of like it breaks the Pokemon lore thing wide open, do you mean like there's never been a situation of a person fucking a Pokemon? Is that where we're going with this?
I mean, I wouldn't say that. Like, there's never been that.
No one fucking a Pokemon in canon. I know they're canonically.
Yes.
Yeah, I know.
I've seen it. I've been on DeviantArt. yeah, I think yes, yes. But the Pokemon company really doesn't want you to think about Pokemon having sex.
Ekans used rap.
String shot. Because like they have eggs. They lay eggs. They all lay eggs.
And Ditto is just like, how does that work?
Yeah, what's Muck?
Yeah. Oh my God. Ditto and Muck, I don't even want to think about that.
You know what I really like about that though? Is that they just said like, what if we made Ditto, but instead of him being like stretchy, we just made him fucking nasty.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. Well, to be honest, yeah. I think Ditto is probably quite nasty too.
I did not like him in the Pokemon, the Detective Pikachu movie.
He made me very uncomfortable. That was pretty funny though with the eyes. Like,
when he took the glasses off, as the reveal, it was pretty great. Yeah, I don't know. The only thing about this for me is like I'm just like not interested in like pouring through all this stuff because I don't care that much. It's just interesting. Like, okay, yeah, it seems that there's another Pokemon game in the works. We certainly knew that. I mean, there's the Pokemon Legends. What is it? ZA or AZ or something like that. Yeah, it seems interesting enough. I bet they're working on stuff for the Switch too, of course. But yeah,
that game better run well.
It won't.
It better.
It won't.
It has to. They need.
It's going to look like if I made it, where it's like you're running on like a JPEG of grass that's like stretched way too far, so it looks really.
I'm going to make a bold prediction here. They're going to tone back the art style, so it's not an open world 3D game.
I think they should. My worry is that they've like the bottle's out of the genie's out of the bottle. Like people are going to be upset if it's not some big sprawling open world.
I want to meet the person who's upset.
They exist.
Well, I know, but like I want to meet that person and then I want to challenge them to a fight. And I'm gonna have my full team of transforming Typhlosions versus their full team of Dittos, where I have one big old mess.
I don't remember what streamer was doing this, but some streamer did like a timed challenge where they had 15 hours to do something, or maybe it was like 16 hours to do something in Pokemon Scarlet or Violet. And he had been playing for like on the dot 16 hours and he paused it and he looked at the in-game time and was at 14 and a half hours, which means there was an hour and a half of frame loss slowdown on the game's end. That's embarrassing.
Yeah.
That is embarrassing.
I love that. But I love that.
Yes, there you go. Justin, speaking of Nintendo and the Switch 2, the Nintendo announced, and I think is shipping, new hardware. It's called the Alarmo. It's a Nintendo alarm clock. You said that you had taken a look at all this. What the fuck is this?
So it's basically an alarm clock that it's like any... Do you ever have like any like Fitbit or Apple Watch that you use to like track your sleep and stuff?
I used a Fitbit for a long time, but I don't anymore.
I want one of those rings too, by the way. Like one of those rings that you have that like track all your vitals. I think that'll be fun.
Oh yeah, those are relatively new.
Yeah, I know I have a Apple Watch, but I like the ring idea because I want it to like sleep with it, and my Apple Watch doesn't last a day to charge.
Yeah, it's got to charge it.
So basically, it's something that like tracks your sleep. It tracks how well you sleep based on your movements. It's motion censored. It'll play different. Nintendo music to try to like wake you up, and it will start like first pretty peaceful and then progressively get more and more crazy the closer you get past your alarm, which I think is pretty funny. I would say if it was just that, if that's all you told me about it, I would be like, I'm fucking in for it. I would buy that. That'd be a fun thing to have. But then you start reading the fine print, Peter. You start realizing that if you sleep with anyone, the motion tracker doesn't work. I'm a married man, and even if I wasn't a married man, I'm a proud dog man. And can you imagine the dog that wakes me up at 5 o'clock in the morning every morning because he has to potty and he's licking my face? You know what? No, excuse me. He doesn't have to potty. He decides that he has to potty at 5 in the morning.
Yeah.
And then he'll like for an hour and a half just like go around the bed trying to wake me up until either my wife or I'm like, you know what, we're taking you out. So I couldn't use this for that sleep tracking thing. So that kind of takes me out of it for wanting it. Then it's what, $150? It's like ridiculously priced.
It is $100.
Yeah. It's still way too much money for an alarm clock. We live in a world where there's an iPhone that is overpriced, granted, but the iPhone, something that we all need to be humans in this society, that has alarms on it that wake you up. Why would you need something else? And if you want to download anything from the internet, you have to have Nintendo Switch on. No, I don't think you have to have Nintendo Switch online to download it. I think you have to have Nintendo Switch online to purchase it or like pre-order it in order to do mm-hmm. that, which is another barrier to buying this thing. Who the fuck is going to buy this?
I really don't know who this is for.
Peter, can I bring you to an article from gamesindustry.biz by Sophia McEvoy, called Pokemon Sleep Surpasses 120 million in revenue.
The one thing I was thinking about was Pokemon Sleep with this. I was like, you guys already kind of have this. I mean, Pokemon Company is different than Nintendo, but like, what is this? What is this for?
So there's clearly an industry for the sleep kind of stuff. Right now, Japan is the top market for this, according to this article, with 88.4 million. So that means a majority of its sales are in Japan. And I'm not here to like throw shade to anyone, but do you know that Japan has a loneliness minister? Like, that's a government position, Peter.
That's fun. I like that.
And it's because Japan is filled with lonely people that are choosing not to get into relationships, whether it's a cost thing or a time thing or they just, you know, don't want to because they don't know how to kind of thing. Like, it's a real problem in the country. And I'm not saying this is targeted towards that, but you see this high market with something like that. Plus, Nintendo is a toy company to begin with, and people will overspend way too much money for Nintendo shit anyway. Name any Mario video game there. Just kidding. I mean, those games are pretty good. but like, people will overpay to buy a Nintendo product anyway, specifically if it's something that's unique like this. People will buy it, maybe not just to, you know, sleep with, but like to like have on a display shelf because it does look kind of cool. And again, I would purchase this if it was functional, not $100 for my lifestyle, but it's not. So I'm not going to purchase it. But I do think there is a place where Nintendo is starting to go outside of just being a game company or a toy company, but they're also trying to be like that.
Kind of like a lifestyle company.
Yeah, a lifestyle company and stuff like that. Think of like Pokemon Go. And I know that's not Nintendo specifically, but Pikmin Bloom. Those properties are like getting people to go out into the world and do things. And like, this is just another tapping into that market. And Pokemon Sleep, well, I don't know when that came out, but it's not that long ago.
It's relatively
14
new, yeah.
months it came out. And it's already made $120 million in revenue. Like, maybe we're too small-brained to like see what Nintendo's seeing here, but clearly this stuff is making money, and I'm pretty sure it's going to be probably hard to purchase one of these alarm clocks, unlike a PS5 Pro.
I also think, like, you know, we were saying, you said, like, they're trying to, like, turn into more of a lifestyle company. I think the unfortunate thing is, like, their tech isn't very good. You know, like, great for the, you know, the lonely people, I suppose, who are sleeping alone. I didn't mean that as a diss. I just mean that, like, sure, if that's your thing and if this was made for lonely people, great. But like, I don't maybe think that the tech in this is going to be incredible either. Like, even if it does, even with the people it's intended for, but
I don't think it matters though, because Nintendo has never been a company that I would like circle to be like, this is the best tech ever.
No,
like, they have unique and creative ideas, but like, I still feel like a lot of the OS of the Switch is like old and like clunky. Do you remember the fucking DS store? Oh my God, that was one of the worst things I've ever experienced in my life. And now that the Switch is out, it's like, oh, they're finally into the N64 era of menus. Like, I mean, like, I don't think they're ever necessarily known for that kind of stuff, and people still, you know, shell out so much money for them. But
I agree, but I think that's going to do it for us today. Thank you so much for listening. We will catch you next week. Before we go, I just want to remind you that you can join our Discord server. The link to that is in the description of this episode. You can also support us on Patreon at patreon.com/hitboxpod. Become a $1 podcast producer or a $3 deluxe podcast producer like Jay Noel, GKS, and Josh Durham. Today, again, we're taking a look at a deeper look at Metaphor Reef and Tazio. I'm going to show Justin some of the systems, explain how I feel about them a little bit more in depth there. So if you're interested in that, again, patreon.com/hitboxpod. If not, follow us on Twitter at hitboxpod or rate this episode in your podcast player of choice. Justin, am I forgetting anything?
You're not forgetting anything, but I want to let the audience know that in the time of our recording, I had tracked 150 steps on my Apple Watch to the fact where I'm already hit my step limit. And it was all because of the gesticulating that you witnessed or listened to during this podcast.
You got to throw that thing out. You got to get the Pokemon Go Plus. Ooh, that little pedometer. All right, we'll catch you next week. Always remember, old games are old. Bye.
Bye. I'll stop recording.